It is Thursday, July 21st, 2020 at 12:26 p.m. Mr. Gerber, will you call the roll for the Stock Board and for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Board?
Vice Chair Bailey?
Here.
Second Vice Chair Duncan Hall? Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
Chairman Ritchie?
Present.
There's a quorum present for both meetings.
All right. Next item is the Pledge of Allegiance. I'll ask everyone to stand.
I don't know that we have a flag.
We just salute whatever.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic, which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Next item is public comments, public communication.
Mr. Chair, we received public communication. Mr. Alvarez, did you want to say anything very quickly in public communication?
Chair, just I'll just say I'll share this information flyer with whoever sent it to you so that it can be shared with the board digitally, because the version that you would get electronically would actually have links to all of the tools that can publish it. So, and I'll get one here too when I walk out. But it'll have links to our CAN dashboard, the Race Equity Action Framework, a lot of the language access tools we created recently, and then to our regional summit, the conversations we're having about expanding opportunities. So. Okay, we have a lot to share, and I know you all have a busy schedule, so I won't take up any more of your time, but if you'd like to visit, like I said, individually about any of this, or if you'd like me to come back and present on some of the research that we've done or the tools that we have, happy to do that.
We welcome that maybe in the fall. Thanks so much.
Yep, thank you.
Good to see
you. Good luck with your work. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe there's any other public comment that anyone else has signed up for a public comment today.
All right, is there a Citywide Advisory Board update?
Yep, Lupe Garcia is here from Citywide Advisory Board. She has completed a very successful women's conference. And Lupe, do you want to give us a very quick, maybe 2-minute rundown on Citywide Advisory Board?
Sure. The minute was called to order on June 12, 2022. Michael Roth mentioned that heat advisory and COVID-19 cases have increased. Rosewood Court updates and HUD inspections. Dorothy Doolittle and Anne Marie Ellis are deputy registrars, assistant people to register to vote and are available to go on property. Sylvia Blanco encouraged people to check on their neighbors during the heat advisory and support management during the HUD inspections. Announced that the LIH waiting list is opening. And HACA Committee Development announcements are Lilani Villegas announced scholarship award ceremony Friday, July the 15th. Diaper drive for families with children from 0 to 1 years old. Lilani gave bringing healthcare updates. Robert Jackson provided youth education success updates. Robert Jackson also provided updates for Rosewood Home Ownership Program updates. Murphy Rowland provided workforce development, IDATS, and IMOMS updates. Nancy Garcia, June 29th is the last day of the Summer Youth Employment Program. The new business is Evelyn, stated there will be no citywide board or resident council meeting in August. Start planning for the national night out. That's all I have on for the updates.
Thank you, Lupe. Are there any questions for Ms. Garcia? I can't thank you enough for your leadership, Lupe, not only for Citywide and the Women's Conference, but just being so present with our residents as well. I think that for just the board to know, Commissioner Apostolo and Lupe are a force to be reckoned with, and they are everywhere when it comes to really making sure that the residents are their interests are being protected. And just this past week, on Monday, a very important discussion was held about security and safety at Chalmers that Mary, even though she's not president of Chalmers any longer, presided, really took the lead on organizing and pulling together. Mary, anything you want to share on that from a resident perspective or other things that from a resident perspective that the board should know?
Sure. With all the criminal activity going on all over town, but there was especially very nervous people there at the new Chalmers East. And so, and since they were new, they were all, wanting to, answers. They needed answers. So I was getting phone calls, but then I called Sylvia and told her, I think they need to hear from both Carlton and Haka that they're being heard. I can hear them, but there's not much I can do other than report it. So I told her, but we needed a town hall meeting, and that's what Veronica and I put together, the new president of the resident council. So I came up with a town hall meeting so that we could have Hank Moreno, DeMarlin, and she Sylvia represented Haka. It went beautifully. All the questions were answered that the residents had, the concerns, and that's what they needed to get out what they were seeing, what they were experiencing, and what they could do. Because we want to, as a community, also help. We don't want to just depend on Carlton and Haka. Y'all aren't there. We're there 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So we can report and to the police and report to the office, but if there was more that we as a community could do, that's what brought us together. So it worked out wonderfully. We had good response and good feedback.
Any questions for Mary or for Lupe?
I've got, I know that we talk about security, seems like every other meeting. Mary, I'm not familiar with, I know that we've had some issues at Chalmers, but what's new? What caused you to call this meeting?
A lot of shootings, people with guns, and it kind of rolls over from downtown.
Yeah.
A fight that happened, I think, at Pennington Center, and it, he wound up at the east of Chalmers with a machine gun, practically, and he started shooting around. So, we've had stuff like that, or people coming down the street. People are afraid to go walking around the block because they'll see somebody high on something, and they're reaching for their pockets, and everybody's now terrified that they're reaching for a gun. And this is during daylight hours. So, and then we have a lot of drug activity at Chalmers South, but people are beginning to really get with it and respond by calling 911, letting the management know, because they used to call me, and I would tell them, no, you don't call me, you call 911, then you let your manager know if it's a Sunday, let them know on Monday morning. So they're beginning to really get on that, but, there's crime everywhere. But the shootings have been a little bit more frequent in that area.
Well, I don't want I don't want us to turn into, is it something green like in Chicago?
Right.
Mike, what are we doing to address this?
Sure. So in just the last 90 days, we hired Hank Moreno. You all had a chance to meet Officer Moreno when we were at Chalmers. So he was a 25-year officer and has brought and was our liaison prior to retiring. I think he's very well respected by the residents and well liked by the residents, and is helping them to put together apartment residents on watch or arrow groups and other neighborhood watch groups, giving them some strategies and also really underscoring, hey, we can only do so much.
Right.
Cameras will only do so much. You're the best. You're the best that we've. Security we've got, call 911. And we also have added to not only the security piece, but working with Hank, we also have been looking at who's living at the property and where we have just cause. We're also working to file, be more aggressive on the eviction front and lease enforcement as well.
And if I may, Commissioner Bailey, I wanted to also share that we have brought on a courtesy officer at Chalmers East, so he actually resides at Chalmers and in exchange for security services for the neighbors there at Chalmers East and Chalmers South. Officer Soto is his name, and So he's already connected with Hank. And unfortunately, he would have been at the meeting this week, but he's also recovering from COVID. But he was on speaker, so he was able to introduce himself. But he's already kind of hit the ground running in responding to issues. There's going to be a dedicated email and also an ability to for residents to call after hours and report any incidents, and they will patch him directly to the resident making the report. So all of those efforts are in conjunction with Hank and apartment residents on watch. And yeah, just being the helping to be the eyes and ears of the neighbors.
Well, I don't want it to be too little too late.
No, I think we are being very proactive. And this is on top of the cameras that we have and the lighting, security lighting, and the restricted access gates. But all of that, again, it takes a village because neighbors need to make sure if a gate is being left open, they take out the pebble, they take out the stick that's maybe keeping that gate open for others, making sure that they are reporting what they're seeing, not only to law enforcement but also to the apartment manager.
I
thought it was very well received.
Yes, it was.
Well, like for 20 years I've been raising the question about whether it's time for us to have a housing authority police force. And I pretty much agreed with staff that it's not over the years. But it takes a village. It only takes one of those stupid guns to wipe out that village. And so but it sounds like y'all are moving down the path. Just if it gets worse, do what you need to.
I appreciate that, Commissioner Bailey. We'll keep you all posted about security. And maybe we'll ask Hank to come in September or October to brief us on what he's saying. By that point, he will have been on the job for 4 or 5 months and be able to give us a more clear-eyed vision of how security needs to be enhanced.
No, talking about a housing authority police force, you saw how effective the police force for the school district in Uvalde was. I mean, you can't just bandage over it. You got to have real law enforcement. But anyway,
and we have colleagues around the country. The current head of President of NARO in Oakland probably spends an inordinate amount of her time dealing with the complexities of that police force and has really struggled to hold on to her police chief. I mean, policing in America today is not for...
Yeah, no, I understand that. That's the reason I'm not pushing as hard as I could because I know there's, at this point in time, there's probably as much, if not more, problems doing that than the protection that they provide. But I don't want the folk to be afraid to walk around Chalmers.
No, we don't want them to be either. And I think some of the things we're doing now, I think Sylvia and I have continued to actively consider, do we need a second officer to backstop, a second security professional to backstop, Hank's work, to support Hank's work. So we've talked about that.
If I may interject, we're also actively working with Carlton Management Services to explore additional security presence.
Okay.
So all of that is on the table.
Yep. But I will tell you that while Chalmers is the most apparent crime, that we're seeing, as you look around other places in and around the city, not far from Chalmers, I mean, there are apartment complexes that we're dealing with through SACC that are, really, 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 really rough. I mean, Chalmers is, you got some challenges, but we're actively working through them. We do have struggles at places like Thurmond, and Meadowbrook is a tough property too. And so we're working through, BTW. So we're always being very diligent about those as well. And that's really where most of, Hank's, efforts are. And we're, doing a lot at those tries. But we'll hold off on that. And I think we probably will provide a briefing to you. We may, work with council to, because I never want to share kind of what we're doing in a public setting. Mm-hmm. So they work with council to brief you all privately about what our security work is at some of these properties that Hank can share. But I hear you loud and clear about making sure that our properties are safe, and we want that for our residents and families.
So we'll be discussing more next Wednesday, our resident council meeting. We're going to have, I think, Officer Soto and Hank is going to be there.
Oh, good. You're good.
So we're going to start that Arrow program at Chalmers next Wednesday.
That's wonderful. Thanks. Thanks, Mary, for your leadership.
Well, let me just ask this question. We've got, 17 or 18 rat properties in our portfolio. And if you got just two people, that's kind of tough for them to cover where they're not. And so, while Chuck has talked about a police force, but I'm just wondering whether you should have a security officer at each property during the day.
To work with,
because if you've got this program, I guess you call it Arrow.
Arrow.
Yes, sir. Well, we...
To see about if it works, to see about expanding that to every property to give, because what I'm hearing you say is, yeah, we got problems at Chalmers, but that's kind of the small things. The bigger things are out here, and we're not hearing about it because we're not hearing about it from the citywide advisory board. You all are hearing about it through the complaints, and so I'm kind of like Chuck. I don't know that we need to have a police force. But I know you've got to have a presence at every property, because just to have an officer here, and then you got something going on at Thurman or at Gaston or at one of these other properties, you're kind of trying to get somebody to run there after the fact.
Right.
And I just think maybe having a presence there mm-hmm. every day, with the property manager,
Well, that's what most of the residents want. They would ask me, or they'll call me and ask me, why can't we have a security guard? Because, especially on the weekends or in the evenings, we've had gunfire. I mean, in East, there was a shooting. He was shooting randomly. And the last one was spilled over from Pan American. He had an AR-15 running around the slide. Now, he could have shot up all these children if they'd have been out there at 7:15 in the afternoon. That's when things got to where I was getting called to, okay, we can't live like this. We can't live like this. I'm like, okay, I'm going to call a meeting. And that's when I got in touch with Sylvia and the Marlon, the manager, and said, no, you need to hear them. You need to hear their, I'm getting secondhand information. I didn't see it. The two ladies that saw it, they took pictures. And the daughter who was visiting zoomed in. She said, Mom, that is not a plague gun. That's an AR-15, the one they use in Uvalde. And he started shooting over there on Salina Street with somebody else that he'd been fighting with at Pan American Center. So it spills over into our property. Not necessarily are they residents, but it just kind of always, seems to, it goes right there. We have other problems, drug problems and whatnot. And yes, I'm sure a lot. There's one south that I know carries a gun because he's already threatened a resident 2 years ago, and he showed it to him. But he still lives there, and he's got four kids. So ever since anybody can carry a gun except, he hides it. But it's just people shouldn't live like that, knowing that. I was approached by somebody I don't know, but he told me, if you don't behave yourself, I will shoot you with this gun. And then he went upstairs like nothing. And the person that he told me, he said, Miss Mary, if I ever get shot, let my mother know and let them know that go up there, that person would probably have done it. And that's a lot for me to carry. Because if something does happen to this person that I really like, and he's a good person, I don't know what I'm going to do. That's just
When we have something like that, where one of our residents is threatened by another resident, do we look into that?
If it's reported to management, that is something that management that hopefully he reported to law enforcement.
Mary, would he want to make a report, or is he too scared?
This happens
him like a year and a half ago, and he didn't make a report. He said he wasn't going to because he knows these type of people. They will come after him. They will shoot him. So, and then another neighbor told me about an incident, and the guys came over. One of them came over to him at 2 o'clock in the morning while he was out on his patio and told him, if you report this to the police, I'll be back, and I will shoot you. Because they were looking through cars, trying to see if they could break in or what we had inside the seats and whatnot.
And individuals can make anonymous reports, so they don't have to provide their name.
I know. I've told them, and he's new. So I told him, you should have called the police. That, oh, I've been threatened so many times. And I'm like, well, that's the point.
Right.
You're here now, and you've only been here like 6 months. Mm-hmm. And so
well, let me just add one more thing, Mike. When y'all are trying to decide what to do and what's the best way to go, look into a security company, a private security company. There are folks that companies
we do services of security companies, and you know, we work very closely with NORA to get security services.
And we have how many dozens of off-duty APD, yeah. AISD, ACC, and,
we do, yes.
And Travis County constables who are steered by, we have a second officer, Officer Davis, who really juggles all of those off-duty officers for different times. The problem that we've hit is that, you know, frankly, there's been so many retirements, so many departures,
yeah.
And frankly, the cost of each officer for per hour, when I started, it was $35 an hour. Now it's
51 plus an hour per officer.
Per officer per hour. So,
yeah.
So
how many officers are you using now?
We have on retainer upwards of probably 30 to 50
mm-hmm.
officers because they do buddy up when they do perform their patrols. And again, they're random, so that way there's no sort of pattern that folks can pick up on.
And frankly, some officers are better than others.
But do you know that they are the presence of these folks? That makes a difference.
I had no idea. But there's something going on at Chalmers South that I started, and there's just two of us, and we kind of we are putting in a journal what's going on, like what that person told me, who's the one that threatened him. I have all that. So I kind of look at on the A side, he looks at the B side.
Well, look, y'all, maybe Neighborhood Watch folks could help because there's obviously been an increase in crime in the city, it sounds like y'all are addressing it. So
we'll keep working on it. We'll keep you all briefed. And again, I thank Mary for
absolutely. And just one last thing, because I know we do have to move on to the agenda. DeMarlo Nixon, who is the manager there at Chalmers City, did reach out to the private sector market rate properties that are right next door, and just to kind of compare notes. What are you dealing with? And basically, they are facing the exact same issues. Violent crime, vandalism, and thefts, and all of that. So I just wanted to leave you with that we're not sort of an outlier. It's happening citywide. But we're going to continue to find solutions.
Yeah.
So just a heads up to the board. Commissioner Ritchie and I asked to visit for a few minutes with the staff at 2 o'clock. So knowing that believing that this meeting would come to an end. So I implore out of respect for the staff, we're going to try to end this meeting at about 1:59. again, I think it's a fairly light agenda, but there's some important things to get through. So I'd like to, with your permission, Mr. Chair, go to the consent agenda. The first item on the HACA consent agenda, the only item, is the board minutes summary for the board meeting that was held on May 19th.
All right. Does anybody have any amendments or changes they'd like to make to the minutes from the May 19th meeting?
No.
Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the board minutes from the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on May 19, 2022.
I so move.
Second.
Commissioner Apostolo, second by Commissioner Bailey. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, we'll move to action item number 2 on the HACA agenda. The first item is resolution number 02755, approving an award for a contract for diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting services. And Gloria Morgan and Catherine Crego are here to talk about that item. Gloria?
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, and staff and guests. I'm Gloria Morgan, the VP of Human Capital and Leadership Development, and I'm here to present to you resolution number 02755, requesting approval of the award of a contract for diversity, equity, and inclusion for consulting services. A little bit of background about this contract. The Housing Authority of the City of Austin's five-year strategic plan, goal number 7, calls for the creation and implementation of a plan to advance inclusion, diversity, equity, and economic and social equity throughout the organization and our programs. Through the creation of this plan, HACA envisions the production of an agency DEI roadmap and the action plan which the consultants will help launch. The consultants will provide the plan using a wide range of inputs, including developing a baseline assessment and audit of key processes. The consultant will also identify appropriate DEI training, oversee the phases of implementation, and work in DEI coaching capacity with key staff. This project should result in phased, continuous, ongoing programming. A little bit about our process. A request for qualifications was issued last year in April of 2015 with a due date of May 20 of 2021. It was advertised in accordance with our procurement policy and also on our website and also on the HACA's marketplace. 5 proposals were reviewed and scored by the HACA's DEI steering committee. 1 respondent was disqualified due to insufficient DEI expertise. Interviews were held with the remaining respondents. The steering committee selected the top respondent, and the HACA's president, CEO, and COO had the opportunity to meet and interview the top respondent. Staff found that MGT Consulting was able to provide a clearer and outline for the project. The company has a clear grasp and understanding of DEI work. They are well credentialed and diverse and have worked with our type of organizations before. Staff that found that MGT Consulting spoke directly to the needs of HACA and is well qualified to complete the work that we're looking for. Therefore, staff is recommending that MGT Consulting's proposal and awarding a contract for DEI services to MGT Consulting. If there are any questions, Catherine and I are available to answer those. We do realize that this proposal request for qualifications did come in. We are asking for 120, but with things changing, we may ask the board for some flexibility in meeting the needs of this contract as well.
In terms of the flexibility, what are you looking at?
We would ask that the board approve up to $150,000 for this contract. Again, when the bid was made, it was 120, but we've obviously seen 10% inflation since then. Plus, if we want them to travel here, and I think we do want them to come and actually physically be here when they're able to, when the COVID swings are down, I think that that's an important component of this. So we don't want to be penny wise, pound foolish on this. This is important work, and it's hard work, and it's very it affects really all of our processes, and we really want someone who's going to dig in and not do it remotely. So.
Also, in the, statement of qualifications, item number 10 says report on any failures to complete the work. And I see where the Colorado School of Mining, did you all dig in and find out what took place there?
We did a little bit. What we found out was that with COVID, Colorado School of Mines wasn't able to move forward, and they were struggling. And beyond it happening,
struggling with what?
To meet timelines, they because the work was being done remotely, as we understand it, there was a difficulty. The school wasn't where it needed to be and didn't have their act together. I think MGT wanted to move probably quicker than they wanted to go, and there just wasn't an alignment there. And
okay.
So, but it was one instance that we've been assured in quite a you know, an extensive, you know, run of work. They've done, I think they represented 13,000 different engagements, you know, through their, since the company was founded. So we thought that that was pretty.
And so MGT is a majority owned firm?
Kathleen, can you respond to that? Because I'm not sure. I think it is. From my
MGT is a majority-owned firm. It is not a minority-owned business. However, the leadership team is certainly are folks with lived experience and various kinds of diversity. And so the senior executives are all people, mostly people of color, and there's just a great diversity of folks on that team.
Yeah.
But it is not a minority-owned business or a woman-owned business.
Okay.
One of the things that really stood out to us about this also is that, you know, Baltimore in particular has been struggling for the last several years. They are actively engaged in Baltimore with the city of Baltimore, the Housing Authority in Baltimore, and some of the people we've been working with are going to have direct experience there. And we thought that that was, you know, as we confront challenges in our city, we thought that that was useful experience. Plus, they've been involved as a firm working with the state of Texas and a number of other local governments in the South. And, you know, we think we're more progressive here in Austin, and we are, but we, you know, they've had to work, I think, in some tough environments, and Austin's not an easy environment to work in. And we want them to, you know, we think we'll learn a lot from them, and we think they'll learn a lot and really be able to help us.
When you say the state of Texas, is there a specific state agency?
Yeah, Catherine, I think you're saying that they work with, was it to Health and Human Services?
Yeah, Health and Human Services, and they've done some work in Dallas around schools and disparities, disparity studies with schools. But Health and Human Services is the state agency.
Okay.
I've got a quick question. Well, I mean, I know this is a kind of a growth industry right now. Why, and Mike, I think maybe you discussed it with me a little bit, but why are we doing this? Is there a statutory requirement that we do it? Is HUD wanting us to do it or what?
No, it's we think as a staff that it's really the right thing to do. We, you know, following the murder of George Floyd and the unrest here in Austin, you know, we formed internally a diversity, equity, and inclusion staff task force, and that task force was focused on helping folks to think through and process various issues that we've confronted as a city and as a society around systemic racism and inequalities over generations, and our agency has been part of that. From its founding documents. So, one of the things that we hit as we worked through issues was when we got to a certain point, most people at some point threw up their hands and said, "Well, that's great, but how do we actually do this?
Right.
And how do we? You know, what are best practices around the country? How do we create professional development opportunities for more historically underrepresented people? How do we create?" Recruitment programs. How do we do mentoring programs? How do we do, we talk a talk, but we don't necessarily see results that we want to see. And I think in HR, me, and Sylvia and others, I think we all sort of said, we just don't know how to do this. And it's a fairly new area of work. The city has struggled with it. In fact, they hired their first chief equity officer, Brian Oakes. Brian's just announced that he's leaving, and I think has left, in fact. But the city has struggled with it. I think most businesses are struggling with it because it's hard if you really want to try to change how your business operates and incorporate these values. And our staff has told us DEI is important, and it became one of the new. It was the only new goal that we added this in the last redo of our strategic framework, and so it's very much on people's minds, not just around race and ethnicity, but gender, but in terms of gender equity and a host of other issues as well. So it's a space that we're just not equipped for. And then of course, as we work with our residents, you know, we haven't even gotten to the resident piece of it. You know, we're seeing, you know, more diversity there too. And how we engage and work with our residents will define, you know, our business and our ability to have impact, you know, for many generations to come. So we think the timing is right. We're starting with the staff, but we want to see the impacts stretch out to those we serve as well. And hopefully we're a light in the city for DEI and getting it right. But, you know, hopefully we're looked at as, you know, they tried and they did some good things in that area, and they're an asset to the community trying to make it better in this area. So that was the principle behind it. Catherine, anything you'd say, or Sylvia, that you want to add to it, or Gloria?
I think that's great, and I would just add that, you know, one of the things that we really focused on in our interviews is that diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, it's not about a feel-good, or, you know, it's not about philanthropy, it's about performance. And so we're really focused on how can we use DEI to be the highest performing agency. We know there's a lot of quantitative, there's a lot of data now, you know, 20, 30 years hence, that firms that do this well, agencies that do it well, have, you know, lower cost of recruiting, they have better retention, they operate more efficiently, and there's even a lot of data that firms that do this well are more innovative. So we're very focused on performance in this.
Okay, well, we're always listed as top performers, and I think we probably have, if not the best, one of the best housing authorities in the country. And if this is going to provide us another tool to make us even better, so be it.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. It's you know, it's definitely sharpening the saw, but it's also I think it's natural to say, well, you know, when you hire a consultant, is someone else going to call the shots in this area? And you know, the probably the closest thing we have to it is when we were doing Chalmers, we met with there's a group of professors at National Case Western University up in Ohio and. In Cleveland, yeah, and they had all sorts of great ideas about how to do effective neighboring and how to build community at Chalmers, and they were extraordinary social engineers, had all sorts of great ideas, and we loved about 60% of what they talked about, and about 40% just wouldn't work here, yeah. And so, you know, I think that we'll find that's the case here too.
Yeah.
We're gonna use tools that will work for us and can. Yeah, be meaningfully and impactful, but we're gonna have to use their model and their approaches and the best practices that they bring to us to create what works best for, you know, the Housing Authority of Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. not someone else's model of what it needs to be. So we're very focused on, you know, as Catherine says, the performance and delivering.
I went to those little conferences they had at the Flores Center at Meadowbrook.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting because it was a multi-family. It says we're going to be building a multi-family first time. So I found it very interesting that, you know, that there was a program like that because you were going to have a diverse strategy of residents, ones that paid the full market price, 60%, and then low income. So... to have mixed income. And some of the things I didn't quite agree, but it really gave us an insight into having the first multifamily apartment. So, I mean, I always come away with something that I learned from going to the whole conferences. So.
And there'll be opportunities for these folks to engage the board as well. So we'll...
Yeah, yes. So I think it would be a great idea. As diverse as city as Austin is,
yeah.
Definitely.
Well, we would appreciate your support, and we would ask for in the motion that one of you offers, again, to give us the flexibility to go up to $150,000, there's some wrinkles to be worked out here to give us the flexibility to work those things out. We'll need to have a new, we're going to need to get a new timeline and some new revised scopes of work. We don't want to be rushed about this, but we want to be very intentional. So. If you were to offer a motion, whoever were to, and we'd appreciate that flexibility.
I'd like to make a motion to make that $150,000.
All right, Commissioner Apostola makes a motion to approve item number two, which is resolution 2755, to make an award to MGC in an amount not to exceed $150,000. Is there a second?
Second.
The second by Commissioner Bailey. Second, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we will go to item number three, which is resolution number 2756, to take action regarding the Bell Steiner Apartments. Acquire the site of the development, lease the site, lease the development site to the owner of the development, and such other actions necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution. And Mr. Ron Colwall will present.
So Commissioner, it's the exact same resolution, but I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Ron, but do we need to do it on the AHC agenda first?
It's probably easier to go ahead and just do the AHC first, then we can close the AHC meeting, and
Then we will do it on the AHC agenda. Unfortunately, state law requires that the chair be physically present here at HACA. So, Mr. Chairman, we're going to ask you to continue in your role as acting chair for the AHC board meeting. With your permission, we'll go to the AHC agenda.
Well, don't ask my permission. You need to ask permission, Ms. Carrington.
Yes, you have my permission to follow what state law requires.
Okay. Chuck, you and I have to talk about this state law because I think it's goofy as hell. But in any event.
So, Mr. Chairman, we've already called it to order. The quorum's been certified. There's no public comment. The consent agenda is item one, which is approving the board minutes for the meeting held on May 19, 2022.
Does anybody have any changes, corrections, the board summary minutes held on May 19, 2022. Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to approve item number one.
I so move.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll go to item number two, which is resolution number 210, authorizing the board of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to execute any and all documents, so take any action that is necessary or desirable to facilitate the acquisition of the Bell Steiner Apartments, which consists of multifamily housing units and associated amenities in Austin, Texas, to be ground leased from the Housing Authority and cause an affiliate liability company of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to own the development and cause the owner to enter into the acquisition and development financing for development and any other actions desirable to allow the consummation of this transaction. Mr. Colwall.
Thank you, Commissioner Ritchie and Commissioners. Mr. Gerber, staff guests, appreciate it, and I'm excited to talk about resolution 210, basically asking you all permission for us to proceed and move forward with acquiring the Bell Steiner apartments. Just to familiarize yourself with this property, I think if any one of us have ventured past or looked up at the Steiner Ranch Steakhouse, this property sits directly next to it, just to the west of the Steiner Ranch Steakhouse, very visible from 620 looking over Lake Travis. It's a fantastic asset, beautiful, beautiful property. It was built in 2016. The partnership that we're trying to move forward with is with our friends at L&M Partners, which we've done. This would be our fourth transaction if we move forward. Again, the property's 302 units, built in 2016. It's currently has a very, very high opportunity area, very high high opportunity of clientele, and our goal here is to really provide some needed affordability in this high opportunity and very very heavily
needed area, not only to the Steiner Range Steakhouse, but to many, many businesses up and down 620 from all the way to the west to Quinlan Park and all the way north to Anderson Mill and further in a lot of areas from HEBs to Walgreens to several businesses and properties. The unique thing I think I would like to share with you all is this will be one of the deepest cuts of rents that we will have taken on in all of our acquisition portfolio. When we get to 50% of affordability by implementing our affordable requirements, we will be cutting almost $680,000, close to $700,000 a year off the NOI in order to achieve the affordability requirements that we're asking for in this property that we follow by state law. So it's a huge windfall for affordability here in the area. We're super excited. You can see rents in the bigger units will be cut as much as $500 and $600 a month at the 80% level, and even deeper cuts at 60%. So we're excited about getting that underway. The property's in fantastic condition. We've walked the majority of the units. It's got everything you can think of from state-of-the-art amenities on the site. I've sent a couple pictures so you can see it. You know, I always used to say, if you see one property, you've seen them all. It's an apartment complex with many, many, many different things, but it is very high quality. It's currently owned by Bell Partners, which is a big, huge property management and acquisition firm out of North Carolina with over 70,000 units. They've just been recapping their assets across the South and Southeast. They have a great relationship with our partners, L&M, and so we're excited that we were able to pull this one off. It was a competitive bid that we won. Our goal here is to use a Freddie Mac loan. We'll be about 71% leveraged here. L&M will be putting in a little over $30 million of equity, and we'll be getting a loan of amount just under $75 million on the property. Expected closing will be mid to late August, and we're moving fairly quickly on the timeline there, and we're currently still in due diligence and working through some, you know, just to make sure everything is right and in good shape. But so far, we've been very fortunate and didn't expect too many problems that we were going to inherit with the quality of this property. It'll be changed. Should we pass this resolution today, it will be called the Bridge at Steiner Ranch Apartments, and it will be managed by our group that manages our third party management company, apartment management professionals upon takeover. I'm happy to answer any other questions that y'all may have for me.
So who actually originally built this in 2016?
It was part of Bell. Bell was the original owner. I don't know the contractor's name or who they used, but it was them.
Well, you answered my question, because that's really who was the owner of the property after it was constructed. And so let me ask you, why are they doing this?
Well, I think as you know, most apartment owners did, these are, I don't want to say they're merchant builders, but they're for-profit developers, and their profit base is based on where the market is today versus where it was in 2016 when they built it. You know, it provides them, you know, that internal rate of return that they need to hit to make their investors happy. And that's kind of what you've seen all through Austin over the last 24 months. And so they're taking advantage of that, you know, that bump in price per unit costs. This is not the only asset that they've moved in Austin. They've moved several of them, and their plan is to continue to take that money and reinvest and buy other assets. So, you know, I don't have access to their internal accounting and why they're doing it, but that's typically the response you get when you talk about why are you moving forward on this. Austin's just a desirable place for investors to come buy property at. We were very fortunate in that we tried to get this property because of our relationship with them through L&M to get it taken off the market before it hit and preempted the high with the price, and we were rejected. And we ended up getting it for $6 million less than what the actual price was based on the competitive market. So we're finally starting to see a little bit of a better realization on our acquisition pricing here based on interest rates and that sort of thing. So we actually came out ahead, but that's about the best I can pretty much tell you at this point.
Ron, I have a question,
maybe, ma'am.
A couple of questions.
Sure.
What is the occupancy on this? Was it in here?
No, it's 98%, and it's 99.4 as of Monday. Pre-leased, but it's 98% occupied.
Okay. And I know you commented that we are securing this through a competitive bid. Do you know who some of the other bidders were, and did we bid the highest price, or are the owners going with us because part of it is the mission of the organization?
Yes, ma'am. We were actually not the highest bid, but two things were in our favor. Number one was our relationship with Bell and through L&M, and they've got a pretty good bond together across the country. They do some things on the East Coast in New Jersey, New York, obviously North Carolina, and L&M has had some investments together on some of their other assets. But secondly, it's our ability to close a transaction when there's other players in town that don't have that track record, especially now when you're seeing people walk away from deals because of interest rate spikes. They're tending to look to people, especially through the brokerage, and looking for references through their broker, which is CBRE, which has closed probably 95% of our deals have been listed through CBRE. And so our reputation of being able to facilitate the close is impeccable. And that carried a lot of weight in their decision because they just didn't want to have to go back and do this all over again.
Have we ever walked away from a transaction?
No, ma'am. Now, that's not to say we wouldn't if we found something critical, and that's one thing we always make clear, from environmental issues to structural issues to something that's really, really egregious that we find in our due diligence period. You know, we would never take something on that would put us in any kind of a harm's way. But we do a lot of this preempt the due diligence before we actually even bid on a property, because usually these are marketed for 3 to 4 weeks minimum, maybe 5. And so when we're interested in a deal, we get permission to go and do some, we bring some consultants in that we use from structural to roofing to, all those types of mechanical, electrical, to make sure they don't see anything that would be detrimental to us prior to us going into an acquisition. The other thing is we've never retraded a property, and a number. And what I mean by that is when we say we offer a price, we don't come back later and say, hey, we need this to be dropped by $2 million, $3 million, $1 million, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important to the sellers, and that's where CBRE has been able to sell us on the backup side of saying our partners, and they know L&M well, do not come back and ask for concessions. We've done a lot of the homework up front. We're very comfortable with this number. It works very well. Interest rates have actually been pretty favorable. We've got a great lock rate, a good spread rate here, so we're pretty fortunate that we timed it a little bit better. We're looking at about a 4.48 all-in rate right now today, so that's pretty good for the way rates have been jumping around.
Did this come to us through CBRE, through L&M, or?
It came through us through CBRE, but they came to us prior to it going to the market, and that's where we were able to come in and try to preemptively buy it. But the sellers at Bell wanted more money, so we chose not to do that and take it to bid. And they understood, and they ended up, they even commented when we were awarded the property. They said, yeah, it was our mistake. We were pretty stupid. We should have taken the offer you offered us last month. But so we were
gotten a few million more dollars.
Yeah, they would, but they were able to. We were able to save a little bit of money on the deal. But you know that was the cause of interest rates anyway. At that point, we would have probably been locked in at a better rate anyway if we would have preemptively bought it. So it worked out well for us in this situation. I'm just super excited about this property in that. I mean, I live very close to this property, being that I'm in Lakeway and you know Lakeway, and you can't get into to Steiner Ranch Steakhouse because the wait lines are so long and they have 20 open tables because they don't have staff to service them. It's a very, very, very expensive place to locate and be close to. So I think this is going to be a really successful one. Should we be able to move forward here? That's going to provide some great opportunity. Great schools. It's Vandegrift School, Steiner Ranch Elementary.
Yeah, Leander School District.
It's Leander's. We got big three bedrooms. And again, I want to share with the board that unlike a lot of for-profits that are forced to put, you know, for certain things through the city, this is going to be appropriately dispersed, all the affordable units across all the floor plans. So this is not going to be just in the small ones or whatever. We're going to take advantage of the same appropriate numbers of three bedrooms as we are, two bedrooms, one bedrooms, and studios. So there'll be an affordability presence across the whole portfolio. And that's an expensive task.
One other, well, I guess maybe two comments. Ron lives in Lakeway. I go to Lakeway a lot. there have been, as far as I know, there are no affordable developments in Lakeway. There have been some proposals that have gone to council in Lakeway that have not been successful. So as far as I know, Ron, and you probably know this better than I, but isn't this going to be the first affordable development in Lakeway?
I'm fairly certain it is now. You know, Walter Moreau has some deeper stuff closer down the Lake Line side, further
right
down that way. But we should be the only one, and the only other affordability close to this are ours. The one that you gave us permission to close on the previous board meeting, Canyon Creek. I mean, we've only had that a month and a half, and it's been a huge success from the residents. Just are thrilled to see what's going on with the rents there. In Valente, which is, you know, down on Anderson Mill in 620,
right,
which
right
has proven to be a really successful affordable asset. So, you know, I think that the need and demand is going to be more than easy to fill as we move forward, getting this to affordability. And again, right now, after an interim, a pretty deep down lease audit of the property, we've got about 28% of the residents there that seem to qualify under the affordable program. So we're not quite at 50. So every unit that will become available and every unit leased over the next period of time will only be rented to affordable units. We will not take any market rent units there until we reach our goals.
Until we reach our
hitting those targets. And we feel with the average turnover rate is about 34%. Over a course of a year, so we feel we should achieve that probably at least within 12 months, if not sooner.
Assuming we approve this today, what is the anticipated closing date?
We're kind of looking, and that was one of the things that we got over the other seller, is even though we were a little bit underpriced, we're looking at about an August 18th close, somewhere between the 15th and the 18th, I think is our back-end date. And we're well ahead of that on other sides, the financing side, the due diligence side. So this is why it's coming to you in July and not in August. But it'll close mid to late August.
One other comment for the members of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation's board. As Mr. Gerber pointed out to me the other day when we were speaking, and if you'll look at your map that you have in your board book, this will be property 60, the 60th property that Austin Affordable Housing Corporation has acquired over, what, a 6 to 7 to 8 year period of time, Ron?
Well, I'd probably go back to 2004. We weren't as aggressive and as active in the market as we are now. but you know, over the last 7 years. But yes, but it's, you know, over the last 7 years, we've really, really taken advantage of some really good opportunities, thanks to you all, and of course, my boss sitting over there, who's giving us the green light to keep going. So really appreciate that.
Well, and thanks to you and Stu.
I would just note that this is actually, I think this is actually 63, isn't it?
61.
Well, we did.
The bluffs at the Griffiths deal that Commissioner Bailey went and Mr. Farrington went with us, that was our 60th. If this will be number 61.
61.
What about Canyon Creek?
That was 59.
That was 59, okay.
What was number 35? Ron, what was 35?
Making me feel real secure, you know, that we got 60. No, we may have 59. Well, I don't know. 62. Let me ask just a quick question, Ron. If this is another, this is like at least, I don't know when we started paying over $100 million or close to $100 million for these things. If housing becomes cheaper in Austin, as it's kind of dipping right now, is that ever going to affect us?
It won't affect us in a negative way, other than our investor distributions may take a little bit of a hit. But because of the tools we have, obviously, with the full exemption, we're able to handle any types of, and we did do that. You can remember 2008 was a bad run, and we had another dip in the market here in Austin after that. And so, where that comes into play is, instead of, you know, maybe throwing out a 6% return or 8% return, we're maybe only throwing out a 4% return. And I'll be honest with you, that'd be great. It'd be good for us too, because, you know, it's just going to lower rent and put more affordability in there. But we're not going to ever be in a situation, knock on woods, I should never say not ever. Things could happen. But I think we're leveraged low enough. And with some of the tools we have, I think we can sustain any type of a downturn. I don't know if we're going to see one. We just saw Samsung's now adding another 10,000. Jobs coming in here again, and you're seeing more and more land. Rates may soften a little bit, but again, in the higher end markets, we're not seeing the dips that we're seeing in other markets, that because we have such a great presence across the city that we're able to watch trends in certain areas from south to north, and to figure out where rents are driving and where rents are not. But yes, that's a great point. And you're seeing that a little bit in that with inflation, with interest rates, are causing a little bit of a downturn in terms of the players that are trying to buy these things on the sideline, therefore driving prices down a little bit, and maybe having some effect on rental rates. But to straight up be honest with you, on these high end opportunity projects that we own, and we own several of them now, we haven't seen any glitch at all going forward. So
much so good. We feel very, very good about them, and we feel like we've got a lot of protections in place thanks to Bill and the team at Coach Rose, and we continue to look at ways to enhance those protections. One thing I will say, you know, you talked about, have we ever walked away from a deal? And, you know, prior to getting to y'all, I would just say, you know, we walk away from tons of deals, like multiple deals now, like almost each day. It's insane. I will tell you all that next week, the Texas Affiliation of Affordable Housing Providers, or TAP, is having their annual Texas Housers Conference. We need to virtually get Ron and Suzanne and probably Edwina a security team, all the people who want to be near them and talk to them about deals. It would not surprise me. I mean, we've gotten so many notes in the last couple of weeks about deals. It would not surprise me if we see in September, coming back to you all, in August and September and October, coming forward with, you know, quite a few different projects. It's been very interesting. We're hearing from attorneys. Just before this call, we got a call from a very proud attorney here in town who has helped on some other things, with us, and he knows what we're looking for. He said, I've got a deal for you, and, let's talk, Tuesday. And so, it's amazing how many folks are seeing us as a conduit to getting in a tough market, to getting transactions done and meeting affordability goals that we have here in the city. And you know, and it's become more competitive. The city is in the space now more fully with their setting up of a public facility corporation. Travis County, God love them, has tried, but we continue our ability to deliver and our proven ability and the fact that we only give our word, we don't give it often, but when we do, we deliver on it, has really been remarkable. And Suzanne and Ron have carried that with an awful lot of help from Edwina and from others. So I thank you all for, it's an impressive body of work and making a huge difference in our community. With that, I would urge us to go ahead and approve resolution number 0210 related to this development.
Let me just say one thing. I'm glad you all have given all these assurances, because one of the things that Ron said was 2008, I just remember 2008, when there was massive foreclosure, this particular area had more foreclosures than any place in Travis County. I'm not sure why they got hit the hardest. The Steiner Reds had more foreclosures than any place in Travis County.
Right.
So, but I'm glad to see that we're here, we're doing this. And on behalf of Commissioner Carrington, I will entertain a motion to approve resolution number 210.
Mr. Can I ask a quick question of Bill? Hey, Bill.
Yes, sir.
If the bottom falls out of this deal and
the deal of the market.
Uh-huh.
Is it the deal or the market?
Well, if the market affects this deal in a way that this particular project is no longer viable and the worst scenarios happen, what are the risks to us? What protections are in there for us?
Well, in the very worst case scenario, the lender would foreclose and take back the property.
Right.
And I'll add, and that's it. I mean, they can't come after us for anything else. It's a
right.
Non-recourse.
That's correct. Yep.
And so we always do. That's why the non-recourse financing is very important to us in terms of a financial. Now, you know, but what will happen, and I can almost assure you, is that if a property can't sustain itself with a tax exemption, it can't sustain itself without one. And so what typically I would see happening is a lender coming back, removing the limited partner from its role, stepping into that and coming back to the housing authority and saying, let's figure this out. We can't afford to not have, you know, your exemption in place, because that's just that much more help.
Yep.
So I think we would probably.
That's right. There's a layer of practical protection there, because as Ron's saying, they would never, I don't think, or would think really hard before they remove the entity that helps provide to the lower operating expenses.
And I assume we still have sovereign immunity on every one of these deals?
Yes, sir. For the housing authority's role as the fee owner, that's correct.
And what about our officer and director in charge? We're getting to be having these more expensive properties. Are we insured high enough?
Yep. That's a good question to ask. I haven't looked at it in about a year. We'll go back and revisit our D&O coverage and make sure that we're and report back to the board.
All right. I got to ask that question once a year.
We would be disappointed if you didn't, Chuck. Mr. Chair, may I just make a couple of observations as we think about risk?
Yes.
And the comment about an area of Austin that had a lot of foreclosures. When we look at our map, our July 2022 map, we are all over the city. We're absolutely north, south, east, and west. And I know, at least when I came on the board, we were talking about really dispersing our affordable housing portfolio. And thanks to Ron and Suzanne and some good relationships, great relationships they have with some brokers, I think we've done a very good job of dispersing the affordable portfolio around Austin. So I do think that helps. That certainly helps some with any potential downturn. To me, the greatest risk is if the legislature at some point decides to take away or reduce the exemption that is given to housing authorities, and I guess out, and probably the city too, but the housing authorities in particular on this, on the tax exemption. That to me is the thing, if we want to worry about something, that that's what we really need to worry about. So with
is that an issue, Edwin?
It's not an issue right now, as far as I know. But I think it's always a possibility that the legislature might take a look at what is being lost in the way of revenue as a result of this advantages that's given to the development of affordable housing if you have a housing authority or subsidiary that is the general partner in the transaction.
Well, I know that the legislature in the last, Carl, I don't know, was it last 4 years or maybe 6 years even, are supposed to, the comptroller is supposed to give them a list of all the tax exemptions that are currently on the books to see if we're losing too much money on those things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and I've got some clients right now that are involved in some long-term economic development agreements under the sales tax, and comptroller's just doing away with it. Going to leave them hanging in the air, unless I can use my persuasive abilities to grandfather us out of that deal. But
well, Chuck, I got an easy one for you,
commissioners.
The legislature has more money than it can spend. It has a spending cap. It's just there's no more money that it can spend, so it's just hoarding money that it can't give back to the taxpayers.
Oh, the lieutenant governor wants to give it back to us.
Commissioners, with it being 1:37, I'm going to interrupt and just ask if we can move forward on a motion to approve resolution 0210.
I think we have the motion, don't we? Don't we just need a second? Didn't we have a motion? I make the motion.
Motion made by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostello. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Commissioners, there's no need for executive
congratulations, session. Ron and Suzanne and staff.
Thank you very much.
Commissioners, we ask for a motion to adjourn Austin Affordable Housing Corporation at 1:38.
I so move.
Stolen. Motion made. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Carrington. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And at 1:39 p.m., the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation has adjourned, and we will return back to the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board of Commissioners meeting to item number three
is resolution number 2756, basically reapproving on the HOPA level all the approved at the AHC level. We would ask for a motion to approve.
So moved.
There's been a motion made by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostello. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we'll go to item number four, which is an update from our CFO, Ms. Chen.
Great. I'm going to ask all the other folks to go ahead and pull off except for Nydia. Thank you so much.
Hang on a second. I'm trying.
I'm sorry.
Hi, Ron.
You can answer, Ron, if you want. You're fine. Yeah, I'm fine with you, Lisa, of course. I just want to provide an opportunity for Barbara very, very quickly, in 5 minutes or less, to give you just a quick update on our operational and financial performance so you guys have a sense of that. And then we'll want to talk a little bit about some incentive for staff as we address issues surrounding inflation and some other things that we're seeing. Barbara?
Sure. Good afternoon, Commissioner. As we promised in the previous month, we are going to come back to present our operating result for fiscal year 2022. Next slide. I put a summary and look back and to compare our actual non-operating to our budget, the board approved budget. That we, like I said, we had a very good year. Our actually, our net income, net profit, the surplus, we are 15.5% from our proposed budget, and the increase is about $1.8 million in dollar, and it's 15.5% higher than what the board approved the budget. And in summary, HAWKAS in the fiscal year 2022's total revenue and expenses are as follows. We reported $615.8 million in total revenue, which including our admin fee and all the HAWK payments, HAWK revenues. And the total operating and the financial expenses, when I say operating and financial, it means that it's those that are related, associated to our day-to-day operation and the management and the earning of the interest financial expenses that to fund our, to provide, you know, support our other capital expenses. Total of $602.3 million in total operating and the financial expenses. So as you can see, our net reserve means that our surplus, and this is going to, this is our net surplus about $13.48 million in total. And the total revenue, including that, as we are going to go over the detail, like I said, this is a summary. We are the total, the revenue this year, that including $3.1 million, this is transferred from our HUB reserve. And to cover our HUB deficit means that it means that we had overfunded us in the previous year, mainly due to the COVID Act and funding. And we had that in our bank account. So this year we are required to pull the money, to transfer the money over to pay in fiscal year 2022. And the $6 million in administrative fee revenue are from our rent program. You, if you recall that we are the contract from the city with the rent program. So in that $6.4 million, it's like an administrative fees revenue, that including the rent payment. The rent payment is over $100 million. But we only count the $6.4 million in administration revenue from the rent program. And that's which was not including in our, you know, fiscal year 2022, but because when we had that, we didn't know. We were within that number. So, but this is a break-even operation, is the $6.4 million in the fee earned. Also, we have to incur those expenses. We subcontract the CVR and to help us with to manage the Berman Hopkins to manage the program, and also we do earn some management fee from this program to cover our overhead, our indirect expenses, and our direct employees' not expenses. The total revenue and the total expenses, there is about $530.1 million is just a pass through. That's our HUB payment, our HUB revenue, and our HUB expenses, which is net to zero. It's a break-even to no impact on our bottom numbers. Okay, the next page. To continue, it's pretty, I think that I'm not going to go too much, but basically, we, except for the HUB revenue, that all the, we also earn the admin fees revenue and the, all any other non-HUB revenue, that which is to cover, to use for our agency-wise in the administrative maintenance, tenant service, and any other general expenses. In fiscal year 2022, the unrestricted net income generated, like we just found, 2022 is from $13.48 million, which is the assets of the revenue over our expenses. That, like I said, we are very, HAWKAS financial position is still very strong and very positive, and we carry an average, right now as we close the book, about $35 million in unrestricted cash for ongoing operations. Means that the $35 million is in our bank account. Okay, so that's for in any future operating in capital expense altogether. And I separated and kind of put into different category that our total administrative expenses, including our salary benefit, employee benefit consulting, and auditing fees and training travel altogether is $36.2 million. And the tenant service, that which we, including all contracting expenses, need to help our residents, including our family, elderly care, boys and girls club, all those, and all together is about $2.87 million. And the maintenance expenses, including our maintenance labor and the material and the contracts, total about $7.73 million. Any other expenses, our franchise taxes, utility, and our insurance, and our interest expenses all together is about $11.12 million. And with that, we also, you will see that's including our expenses, is that we transfer $9.71 million from our SHCC and our AHC's surplus to help with all our program, our other operation, and including our the LIH public housing, LIH PBI program, and the Austin Pathways, and the COCC, all the operating costs and expenses. Next, please. It's just kind of show you a picture. You know, I like to put a pie, so just show you where our where our funding is coming from. Our actual for 2022, 93% of our funding actually is from HUD programs. And non-HUD program is about $6.93 million, total about $602.8 million in total.
But Barbara, of the 561, how much of that is SHCC pass-through?
We have that number in the next slide.
Next slide, okay, sorry.
Okay, if you look at under the Southwest Housing Comparison Corp, you will see the 464,774. Can you see it clearly? That's the one that, to answer Mr. Gerber's question, that's the how much the pass through, that's the SHCC for payment, for rent payments. Okay, that's just for all of the rent payments. So I did just kind of make a highlight with and a separate, not necessary in any order or anything, based on the program, based on the operation, separate them into that. So I separate them into that our Austin Pathway, our Assistant Housing Section A program, and our SHCC, and our Austin Affordable. Austin Affordable Housing that runs job, and that our PBI and LIH operation, okay, and our COCC. Overall, as you can see, that we do transfer $9.7 million from the SA, if you look at under the Southwest Housing Corporation, so we transfer $8.79 million from SHCC to fund our Austin Pathways and fund our PBI operation, mainly to fund those programs. Our assistant housing program this year, they can break even because part of the reason, because we have that surplus in HUD payment, and there was a small amount of surplus, so we can transfer those surplus to cover the expenses. But overall, like I say, at the end, conclusion, we are in a very good position. We are in a very strong financial position for this agency. We continue to increase our reserve to put it north. So for our future, maybe operating expenses and our development. But we still have some little bit concern is, and that's Mr. Gilbert is going to talk about later, it's still, this is, I just have to point it out, our SHCC with the uncertain of the contract. And also the inflation, this year the inflation, and we all know that it's outrageous, it's much higher than unexpected. Nobody expects this, in 40 years, highest, also. And also, we also have a concern about affordability of our housing market in the Austin area. But basically, that's the three concerns we have. that have an impact on our operation. So if that concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'm here to...
It's a quick overview, and yes. Some of you may have questions. And Barbara will have a longer presentation when we are all together in person next month. But does anyone have any quick questions of Barbara? And the issue I wanted to talk about for just a second was around the issue of inflation and that the staff are really feeling the impacts of that. As you know, we've had over 9% inflation from this point last year. And we've heard extensively from staff about that matter. So as part of the report today, we would like to ask you all to approve staff receiving, typically we have provided an incentive for the tax-free holiday. We felt as an executive team that it was important really to step away from the tax-free holiday, which some people use for their kids and some people use for other things. That's fine. But we really need to address more holistically the needs of our staff. We've done that through a $1,000 bonus at Christmas time. We did that with a 3% pay across the board pay increase that this board approved at the start of the year, but that pays out over the year. But it still doesn't keep up with inflation. So we're asking that we would be able to provide every member of the staff a one-time payment of $2,000 that would be paid probably at the end of next week if this approved by this board. And that would be people can save it for the tax-free holiday or they can just pay their bills and do whatever they want with it. But it totals about $730,000. And we think that it's necessary for retention, and we think it's necessary to frankly show support for our staff that are going through some serious things. And you're seeing it at the city level. The city has just been going through an effort there. The city manager's budget is recommending a one-time $1,500 retention bonus. We didn't know about that until after we started talking about this, but they suggested that. Staff is also hearing an awful lot about, the city's effort to try to raise the minimum wage from $15 to $22, but the city manager has come back and tempered that and said we can't get to $22, we can get to $18, and we can put $1,500 per person in that wouldn't be built into the base; it'd be a one-time thing. So our request would be we think that this is important for competitiveness' sake, but also as we do a salary survey and other things, we're in a moment where we need to. We need to invest in staff, and we think that this incentive is a way to do that. We'd ask for your approval of that.
You need a motion.
Yes, ma'am. While we're waiting for the chair to return, are there any other questions for Barbara?
Mike, I've got one issue that I talked to you about the $2,000 and giving it to all employees. I think we pay our executive staff about what we need to be paying, but I'm agreeable to the $2,000 for the retention. I think it's just that's to show them that we think everybody's doing a good job.
And are important to us to be able to hang on to them.
Yep.
And we're talking about this across the board.
Right. Right. And they receive $2,000.
Yes.
Any deductions are not taken out of that.
That's correct.
Yes.
So on behalf of the chairman, I would ask for a motion to approve.
Okay. So move.
Commissioner Carrington moves to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Bailey moves to seconds.
All in favor, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
And just to confirm, we are going to provide a $2,000 one-time incentive for staff that will be distributed before the end of July, probably next Friday. And that will constitute action that we're taking in this regard for until we get to Christmas time. And we'll see what the impacts are for this. We'll also by fall, so thank you all very much for your support. We will also have a salary survey study that's being done, and we'll have information about that in the fall. So that'll also provide us with another robust set of data points about what we're dealing with in terms of staff retention. The good news is we're seeing a lot of, we've got a full complement of maintenance staff. We've got a full complement of managers. We're struggling with assistant managers. We're struggling with, some of our housing eligibility specialists and a few other positions that have typically had some turnover. But we're seeing, I think, more stability than we've I feel better today than I felt 3 or 4 months ago. Is that a fair?
Sure. Let's not jinx anything. Yeah, it's really, entry-level positions, those frontline staff that we're struggling with, and I think this will definitely go a long way in retaining staff and show that we are being responsive to
Andrea.
Yeah, I got it. Mm-hmm.
Mike, I've got a quick question for Barbara.
Yeah.
I know we talked about this a couple of meetings ago. The $35 million unrestricted cash,
mm-hmm.
is that have anything to do with our unrestricted reserves and our restricted reserves?
This is our unrestricted reserve. Our restricted reserve is separate.
Well, I knew it was separate. I just wondered if this
totally
was a third pot. This is not a third pot of money. This is the unrestricted.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. All right. That's it.
Okay. Well, why don't we stop there?
Is there anything else?
There's no other business to come before the board. And for staff that are logging on to this meeting, it's actually on the other link. So check your emails. The other link.
So with that, I'll chair entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Costello. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We are adjourned officially at 1:59 p.m. on Thursday, July 21st, 2022.